What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. We're hanging out here at Big 12 Media Days at the Star in Frisco. We got a lot to get into on the show. As a matter of fact, we'll replay the Craig Way interview. Craig Way, the voice of Longhorn, sat down with Tom Herman here at Big 12 Media Days. We'll replay that interview for you on the other side. As a matter of fact, next segment, we'll do that on the other side of the break. We'll also get into some Texas football discussion here. The two topics that Tom Herman was drilled about from the media, of course, the quarterback position. We talked about that in the first hour. The second topic that was, I think, at the forefront was Texas and who is going to call the offensive plays for Texas. Right now it is Tim Beck, but Tom Herman's asked about it and talked about it. Who's going to call the plays? We'll get into that, too, coming up a little bit later on this hour. We'll talk about the Texas defense as well. We'll get into that. Todd Orlando, what he's got to do. Chris Del Conte looking sharp over here as well. CDC, the man. Yeah. Oh, we're going to get a little fist pound from CDC over here, showing some love as well. Yeah, so we had all the stars out. As a matter of fact, CDC did sit down with BK and Trey a little bit early on, so you want to make sure you listen to the podcast. Chris Del Conte sat down with them. They had a little bit of a discussion with Tom Herman. It was rapid fire, but Tom Herman sat down with BK and Trey during his time here at Big 12 Media Days. You can hear that on the podcast. My man Stu working real hard, Stu Myrick working real hard to try to get those interviews for us, so you can get that as well. And like I said, we'll replay the Craig Way interview with Tom Herman next segment, so around 2:25 we'll replay that for you coming up on the other side of the break. I want to talk about Tom Herman and whether he's going to call the plays. His answers to the questions about the play calling, very interesting, so we'll dive a little bit deep there. There's also some other Big 12 issues I want to get to, some topics I want to talk about. So we'll dive into that coming up a little bit later on the show. There's some NFL stuff. There's some Cowboys news I want to get to. There is some news about the Le'Veon Bell story. It just gets more interesting by the day. If we have time, we'll dive into that too. So you can always hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Wax is at Not the Fake Wax in the Twitterverse. All right, let's start with Tom Herman and the play calling duties on the 40-acre. So Tom Herman was asked about the play calling duties, and he said no decision on who will call the plays has been made yet. All right, so no decision has been made. Even though Tim Beck right now is the presumptive play caller for Texas, no decision has been made. Remember Tom Herman, he is at the least more involved in that Texas Bowl with the Texas offense, and at the most, he's probably calling the plays, all right, for the Texas offense. So no decision has been made on who's going to call the plays. And also, keep this in mind, he said there's no sense of urgency to make a decision on who's going to call those plays. So he says he's been intimately involved in the play calling on game days. He's got veto powers over who's going to do what and if they're going to call this play in whatever situation. But he says there's no sense of urgency to make Tim Beck the play caller. And I'll say it now, and I've said it time and time and time again. If Tim Beck is demoted and Herb Hand is promoted, and, you know, you have all of these different scenarios where Drew Merringer may come up to call plays. If that situation happens, that means the fit is at the shan. It's a bad thing for Texas. All right. Best case scenario, Tim Beck actually works out for Texas. Longhorn fans do not like Tim Beck. They don't have a very complimentary opinion of Tim Beck. All right. But I'm telling you that, you know, Tom Herman's got a lot of faith in him. That's why Tom Herman decided, you know what, I'm going to make a move to improve the offensive line. So he brought in Herb Hand. I'm going to make a move to improve the wide receiving core, which is why he split up the coaching duties between the inside wide receivers coach and now you have the outside receivers. Corby Meekins is the inside wide receivers coach, and you have Drew Merringer, who's the outside wide receivers coach. You know, he brought in graduate transfers. He tried to do everything that he could do to help Tim Beck achieve the goal of giving Texas an offensive identity, something they just haven't had since Colt McCoy really left the 40-acre. I take that back. when Deontay Foreman was here in 2016, they had an offensive identity. It was give the ball to Deontay Foreman. But schematically, Texas has not really had an offensive identity since Colt McCoy left. And usually your offensive identity, I will say, is tied to your best player. Who's the playmaker you have? Who's the guy that's a game changer for you? So whoever that game changer is, you force feed him the football. You find ways to get them the football. That's how you develop an offensive identity. Texas hasn't had that guy since Deontay Foreman in 2016, and before that it was Colt McCoy. So who's the guy they're going to force feed the football to that is going to, you know, develop an identity for Texas? That's Tim Beck's responsibility. He's got to figure that out. But like I said, Tom Herman did everything within his power to help out Tim Beck. But in the questions about Tim Beck and questions about the Texas offense, I will say that Tom Herman did not really compliment Tim Beck. It's almost how you describe an unattractive person to your friend you're trying to fix them up with. You know what I mean? He basically said Tim Beck has a good personality, and he's really funny, and he's got a great sense of humor, but he never said if Tim Beck was hot. When you're trying to fix your friend up with someone, the question, all they want to know is, are they attractive? Are they hot? All right? And he's like, well, no, he's got a good personality. Oh, no, she's got a good sense of humor. Oh, no, she's a really great person. Oh, you would love her. You guys both love Game of Thrones. No. That's how he was describing Tim Beck to the media. He never really complimented Tim Beck, which to me says I don't know if he has supreme confidence in Tim Beck either. When they ask if, you know, a decision has been made on a play call, he says no decision has been made. And he also says, hey, we're going to do whatever is best for the University of Texas and for the offense, not saying that I'm going to give Tim Beck the play-calling duties. I think Longhorn fans should be happy that at least Tom Herman is open to the idea of taking it on himself. And we've talked about this in the Big 12. In the Big 12, there seems to be a culture where head coaches can get calling their own plays. We talked about this yesterday, right? You go look at the Big 12. You go look at, you know, Lincoln Riley and Dana Holgorsen, guys who are calling their own plays. You go look at Gary Patterson, you know, calls his own plays. He's on the defensive side of the ball. Mike Gundy used to call his own plays. We talked to David Beatty yesterday. He was calling his own plays before he brings in an offensive coordinator. So in the Big 12, there seems to be this culture of guys calling their own plays, and I wonder if Tom Herman's going to end up falling into that group, and most of it has to do with their offensive expertise. Lincoln Riley, Dana Holgorsen, Cliff Kingsbury, those guys feel so obsessed with that offensive system that they've perfected, that they have all throughout their career, that they've actually, you know, evolved all throughout their career. They've taken little parts and pieces from every different offense. They feel like they have to be that hands-on. And Tom Herman's pro-spread offense, as he calls it, it may call for Tom Herman to run it. You know what I mean? Forget the filters. Forget the anything that can be lost in communication or lost in translation with Tim Beck and company. Maybe at least starting out for Tom Herman to implement that culture and implement that offensive system, maybe he's got to go hands-on with the quarterback, whoever that quarterback is going to be. And you're seeing that more and more. We're actually seeing it more and more in the NFL now, too. Actually, there are more head coaches in the NFL calling their own plays. Most of them offensive, all right? There are a couple of defense. Matt Patricia will probably call his own plays now with Detroit. Zimmer calls his own defensive plays with the Vikings. But there are probably 14 to 15 offensive coaches in the NFL right now that call their own plays. And that's more than ever before. And the reason is because the quarterback position is more difficult to play at the college level and the pro level than ever before. All right, the idiosyncrasies, the little small details. So now all these coaches figure I need to basically have a spitting image of myself on the field, football-wise. Coach Kenny used to always say, I'm breaking you guys down, and I'm going to rebuild you in my image so that you guys are little Coach Aquinas on the field. You see the game like me. You look at the game like me, except you're faster, and you're stronger, and you're bigger, and you're better looking. So that's essentially what coaches want to do with their quarterbacks now. They need to be more hands-on, and I wonder if Tom Herman needs that. Because if Tim Beck can't make that happen, if he can't evolve these quarterbacks within this pro-spread offense, then Tom Herman's got to go do it himself. And like I said, if the quarterbacks aren't on the right trajectory, if they're not improving at the rate that Tom Herman expects, Texas won't get to 9 wins, where at least where I have them predicted. And if the offense doesn't have an offensive identity or formulate one by then Texas won't get there either. So if Tom Herman has to come save the day and be captain, you know, save-a-o, save the offense, if he's got to come do that, then Texas is in a bad situation, really bad. We don't want that. I don't want that. I'm rooting for Tim Beck. Unlike most of y'all out there, I am rooting for Tim Beck. I want Tim Beck to succeed. Because if Tim Beck does not succeed, you ain't winning 8 games this year. Oh, no, because that means you demoted him because he was doing that bad early on. That means the quarterback situation is probably, that means you're probably still in a quarterback competition. All of those things will probably lead Texas to being a 7, if they're lucky, an 8-win team. Hell, they could be a 6-win team if things go really, really bad and go off the rails. So I know it sounds crazy. I'm rooting for Tim Beck. I want him to do well. Tom Herman, it's his offense. He was brought here to reinvent Texas's offense because Texas offense. I'll give you a stat about how bad Texas offense has been. How about this? So we had Big 12 media days. This is one stat. It's amazing. I couldn't believe it when I found it. So look at the preseason teams for the Big 12 on the offensive side of the ball in the last 10 years. All right. So go back to all the way back to 2009, 10 years ago. Texas had 7 different players make the preseason all Big 12 team on offense. 7 of them. 6 of them have been offensive linemen. You know why that's mind blowing? Because Texas haven't had one offensive lineman drafted since 2008. That's Connor Williams. So even when the Big 12 thinks Texas is going to have a good player on offense, they're wrong. And the one position where the Big 12 media thinks Texas should have had some competent or really above average offensive personnel, Texas can't even develop those guys into NFL players. The other player other than an offensive lineman who made the preseason All-Big 12 team on offense in the last 10 years for Texas, Malcolm Brown, the running back, who, by the way, is playing for the L.A. Rams in the NFL. So he wasn't bad. He was a 5-star guy. But think about it. That's how bad Texas has been offensively. Right? It was Connor Williams, Malcolm Brown, Kyle Hicks, Adam Ulatowski, Chris Hall, Trey Hopkins. These are your all Big 12 nominees for Texas on offense the last 10 years. That's how bad it's been. So Tom Herman was brought in with that offense, with that offensive acumen, with the sole purpose of reinventing Texas offense. And I think he's going to end up doing a good job. I think he actually did make some improvements this offseason. But I don't think Texas is going to grow wings overnight. They're not drinking Red Bull. They're not going to grow wings overnight. It's going to be a slow process for them to get back to being an offensive juggernaut. But there are 3 phases of the game, and offense is just 1. And you can win with other phases of the game. People just don't like to admit it. So for him calling the plays, I've stated where I kind of stand on the issue. I would like Texas to improve, but I would like it to be in the vision of Tom Herman. And I don't want him to have to go to plan B and plan C, which a lot of Longhorn fans, they would like him to go to plan B and plan C and just get rid of Tim Beck. And maybe Tim Beck is his version of Sean Watson. And he's sticking with him way too long, the way Charlie Strong stuck with Sean Watson way too long and ended up being to his detriment. It ended up being part of his downfall that he was too faithful to his assistant coaches. I don't think Tom Herman's there yet. But I guarantee you, it won't take long for Tom Herman. Tom Herman probably will call the plays, honestly. If you want to go conspiracy theory and step out on that grassy knoll, he'll probably call the offensive plays or have veto power and be that much involved. But he'll give Tim Beck the title so that he doesn't have to deal with the blowback of him not calling the plays. There's still some insulation there between he and the media as a result of the plays that are called and how Texas is doing offensively. Because even in the Texas Bowl, Texas wasn't dominant offensively. The offense had a little bit more flow, a little bit more continuity, but it wasn't a dominant offensive performance by Texas. You know what I mean? So I'm probably in the minority here, and I'm used to being in the minority because I am a minority, but I'm rooting for Tim Beck. I want him to do well, man. I want Tim Beck to do well. I don't want Tim Beck to get demoted and get fired and all that. I know most Longhorn fans want that. I don't think that's the way to go. Also, Tom Herman brought this up. I thought it was really interesting when it comes to play calling. He said it doesn't matter who the play caller is, that if the running game is as bad as it was last year, Tom Herman can be the play caller. Hell, you can go out there and get the ghost of Vince Lombardi to come call the damn plays, and it won't matter if Texas can't run the ball. And I totally understand what he's saying. Texas got to find a running game. Last year, the Texas running game was probably as bad as it's been in a really long time. Jeff Howe has a great stat that – the leading rusher for Texas was Sam Ehlinger, 381 yards, the lowest total for a leading rusher since 1958. I mean, it was bad. Hey, Texas averaged 3.6 yards per carry, only ahead of Baylor and Iowa State and Kansas, all right, in terms of yards per carry. They had 1,815 yards as a team. Hell, Oklahoma led the Big 12 with 3,049 rushing yards, 5.6 yards per carry. And I throw this stat out there all the time, and I love this stat. And I'm a stat head. If you look at the teams in college football who have had at least three different 500-yard rushers on their team in the same season, all right, this year there are 14 teams that accomplished that goal. Three different 500-yard rushers on the same team. 14 teams. Eight of them are Power 5 teams. So only eight Power 5 teams were able to accomplish that goal. Out of those eight Power 5 teams, the national champion, Alabama's in that group. The SEC winner, Georgia's in that group. The ACC winner, Clemson's in that group. The Big 12 champion, Oklahoma's in that group. The Big 10 champion, Ohio State's in that group. Michigan is in that group. I think Duke's in that group. You just look at all the teams that are in that group of teams who were able to get there, to reach that criteria, have at least three different rushers rush for 500 yards in a season. What it says is that not only can you control the line of scrimmage and control the battle of physicality, but you can dominate and impose your will on your opponent. And not only that, you can control the tempo. People are all about, you know, up the tempo, let's go fast, up tempo, up tempo, up tempo. Up tempo doesn't necessarily win you championships. Being able to control the tempo, that wins you championships. Can you control the tempo? You know, the last time Texas had three different rushers rush for at least 500 yards in a season? 2005, when they won a national title. And what could they do? Impose their will. They control the line of scrimmage, the battle of physicality, the mentality of physicality. They could control the tempo with that group, right? They had great tight ends. They really didn't have great wide receivers in 05. They had great tight ends, great offensive linemen, and a great running game. And that's how they won a national title. So for Texas, to me, that's where you go. Sam Ellinger, he could be a guy that rushes for 500 yards. I think Trey Watson, who you're bringing in, can be that versatile. I think Keontae Ingram, who's the number one running back in the state coming in, who averaged, I don't know, over 9 yards a carry, he can be one of those guys, too, that you can bring in, and he can add that element of explosivity in the running game. He's not a guy that not only moves the chains, but he changes the game. So Texas, that's the thing about Shane Buechele. Shane Buechele's got no shot at being a great starting quarterback for Texas unless he has a running game. 2016, he had Deontay Foreman, a 2,000-yard rusher. That's why Texas led the country in play-action passes that year, and that's why Shane Buechele could be so effective. If you ain't got a running game, dude, you're putting Shane Buechele out there to the wolves. A wolf. That's malpractice to put him out there without a running game. That's why Iowa State was able to put three guys in front of him and drop eight, because Texas couldn't run the ball. And there are no passing windows when you drop eight guys back in pass coverage. All the windows are clogged. Hell, you got to be Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers to throw through those holes, throw those windows. And Shane Buechele ain't that. So unless you can run the ball and force teams to put eight in the box so you can get one-on-one coverage on the outside, don't give a damn who is throwing the football. Now, Sam Ellinger, on the other hand, against a three-man front, hell, he'll just start the running game himself. He'll be the running game. He'll be the one-man show. I always say he's like that, you know, he'll play all the roles in the show that you need, all the roles in the sitcom. That's what he can do. He can be your leading rusher. He can be your leading passer. It's a Sam Ellinger show. Shane Buechele can't do that. So you definitely, like Summer said, you need a running game. And I like the, you know, I like that average of 500 yards here or there, 500 for Sam, 500 for Trey Watson, 500 for Keontae Ingram. You know, and maybe, yeah, it's a Tenille Carter, or maybe it's a Daniel Young that steps up, but I think those are going to be the three guys in the running game that make the biggest difference. Trey Watson, Sam Ellinger, and Keontae Ingram. And, you know, Keontae Ingram, you know, he's going to, like I said, he's going to come, it's going to take him a while to adjust. So Trey Watson, he's going to have to be big early on. And my man Jeff Howe does a really good job of comparing this offense to the 2008 offense for Texas. And yes, that is Colt McCoy, and he has one of the greatest years in the history of college football. But you have two legitimate wide receiving targets like you do for Texas, right? You got Colin Johnson, who's a first round pick in a lot of mock drafts. If you look at, you know, Bleacher Report or RJ White or Walter Camp or Draft Blaster or The Big Lead, they've got Colin Johnson drafted in the first round, late first round, but still a first round pick. Hell, Roy Williams is the last time you had a first round pick at wide receiver for Texas. And they got little Jordan Humphrey, we all agree, the most versatile weapon for Texas on the outside and probably the best wide receiver all around they got. And he can play in the backfield, play him at tight end, play him at flex tight end, play him in the slot, play him out wide. You can put him any damn where. He'll put him in the Wildcat and give him the football. So you got two really good quarterbacks, and you don't have a dominant running back, but you didn't have that in 2008 either. You had Chris Obanaya, who played more snaps than any other person on offense other than Colt McCoy in 2008. And he had at least 40 receptions and at least 30 rushes, which hasn't happened on the 40 acres since Eric Metcalf in 1988. But the versatility and the diversity those guys bring to the table, they'll make your offense multiple. People don't know this about Tom Herman's offense, but it wasn't multiple last year at all. It was really compartmentalized. I'll give you this stat here. Tom Herman and Texas used 11 personnel 90% of the snaps that season. 90%. Hell, that's very predictable. That's too predictable. And I think this year, because they have actually two tight ends that they can depend on, in Reese Latow and also in Cade Brewer's coming back. And let me forget about Andrew Beck. And I'll tell you why that's big to have Andrew Beck to add to that depth here in a second. And you got Malcolm Epps coming in the fall, four legitimate tight ends, and three of those guys you can consider maybe five tool tight ends. Coaches in college football ran 12 personnel. That's one running back, two tight ends, 42% of the snaps last year. Texas ran, like I said, 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, 90% of the time. That'll change this year. You want to know why? Because that dime personnel, that six defensive back package that's been so popular now in the Big 12, Iowa State popularized it. Then Texas had their own version of it with the lightning package. You've seen TCU use different versions of it. That actually can be countered effectively with two tight ends. But who in the hell's got two tight ends these days? Who's got two legitimate tight ends that can stretch the field, that can also play H-back, that also can block, that also can run routes and separate? You know what I mean? Like, who's got those five tool tight ends? Well, actually, Texas, now for the first time in a really, really, really long time, they actually may have two 5-2 tight ends. They got Reese Latow and Cade Brewer. Both of those guys are fantastic. And they got Malcolm Epps coming in. And, of course, they got a veteran in Andrew Beck. So we're worried about the offensive line, right, because Texas' offensive line was abysmal last year, and it was one of the worst offensive lines in college football. You've added Calvin Anderson as a graduate transfer to that, but now you got Patrick Vahe, who's a veteran. Now you got Zach Shackford, also a veteran. You got three veterans now on that offensive line, and what if you started adding multiple tight ends to help them win the numbers game and win the leverage game and be able to, dominate in the running game up front? I think Texas can do that. And also having two tight ends, it makes you multiple. Like having a guy like Trey Watson, you can put him in a slot, you can put him in the backfield. Having two tight ends, you can shuffle and shift between 11 personnel and 12 personnel and then back to, put that guy in the slot. And then maybe you can go to, 21 personnel, depending on how you want to use those guys as an H-back or a four-back. And that multiplicity, it gives defenses headaches. The last time Texas had two tight ends with double-digit receptions, 2014, Jeff Swaim and M.J. McFarland. Jeff Swaim had 11 receptions. McFarland had 10. In 2011, D.J. Grant had 16 receptions. Blaine Irby had 11 receptions. And before that, you got to go all the way back to 2004 with Bo Skies and David Thomas, who had 25 and 26 receptions each. So, and that, think about 04. Think about how multiple that team was and how dominant they were at the line of scrimmage. Not great wide receiving play, really, but they really had the ability to go play action and shift and move before the snap and move things around. It's because they had two really good tight ends. It's rare, but now I think Texas may be at the best in terms of depth at the tight end position since 04. That is very possible. And that's something that was an endangered species on the 40 acres for a real long time. Now, we've had one tight end, that stepped up. Jermichael Finley in 07 had 45 receptions. Dan Buckner in 09 played that flex tight end, had 45 receptions. But we haven't had two legitimately 5-2 tight ends in a real long time. That's going to help that offensive line that needs a ton of it. That's going to help them get to my three different 500-yard rusher stats. And Trey Watson and his versatility, that's going to help them, get out of that 11 personnel so much and be able to do more things on offense. So I like all the additions that were made. I think they were a necessity. But I also think there's no reason to think Texas is going to be a dominant running game next year. So they may have to use the wide receivers in the, to open up the running game like they did in that K-State game I pointed out. Sam Mellinger has a 101.4 passer rating. when he gets rid of the ball within 2.5 seconds of the snap. Actually, Shane Buechele has a 94 passer rating. But that Sam Ehlinger's that passer rating is third in the Big 12 behind Kyle Kemp, I believe, in terms of the passer rating when he gets rid of the ball really quickly, within 2.5 seconds. In that K-State game where he went 30 of 50, completing 60% of his passes for 380 yards and rushed for over 100 yards too, that was the game plan. Use the pass to open up the run. Short, high-percentage passes, that makes you minimize the risk, but you up the reward, right? You increase the reward, but you minimize the risk. You get him in a groove. You get him confident. You give him in a rhythm, and you get the ball into the hands of your playmakers. What did I say? How do you determine an identity on offense? Get the ball. Force-feed the ball to your playmakers. That's what Texas did when they had Deontay Foreman in 2016. That was the identity. In 2009, it was Jordan Shipley and Colt McCoy. Force-feed those guys to football. 2008, it's Colt McCoy, it's Jordan Shipley, it's Quan Cosby. Force-feed them the football. There's your identity in a nutshell. And everything else will grow and evolve off that. So Texas needs to force-feed the football to their best players. Who are your best players? Colin Johnson, projected to be a first-round pick by a lot of mock drafts in 2019, and Lil Jordan Humphrey. All right, the most versatile weapon you got offensively. Force-feed those guys the ball. And I think Sam Ehlinger is a big part of that, too. And then your identity will naturally develop. But you got to find creative ways to get them to football. And that's why the formation diversity is so big. You can't be in 11 personnel the whole damn time. You got to find different ways to mix it up, to put Lil Jordan Humphrey in different positions, to get him a mismatch, one that's advantageous to him. But that K-State game, I remember that. You know, that's the game where they had a lot of yards. I think the most yards after the catch they've ever had. Reggie Hemphill Mapps had 121 yards receiving. Colin Johnson had 92 yards receiving. Lil Jordan Humphrey had 60 yards receiving. Gerard Hurd had 50. And most of those were pitch and catch. Those guys would catch them, and then you see them get the rack yards or the yak yards. And I think that's how this offense is going to look this year. It's going to look a lot different than last year. But I think if you can kind of, like I say, if you can force feed the football to your best players, you'll develop that identity. But the tight ends are going to be big. They're going to help the O-line, but they're also going to help your versatility, and they're also going to help your diversity on offense. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more. We'll actually play the Tom Herman interview that with Craig Way. We'll play that sit-down, also get back into the Big 12 discussion. We'll talk about some of the other teams. We'll talk about Texas Tech a little bit, talk about TCU. We'll state some of the dark horses in the Big 12 race. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Getting ready for Big 12 Media Days. Getting for another breakout session here. We're out here at the Star in Frisco, thanks to our friends at Reliable Automotive. I saw a great stat from Brett McMurphy, at Brett_McMurphy. Says, amazing Tom Herman stat here. He said, since his days as OC at Ohio State, Herman's teams have been an underdog 16 times. They are 15-1 versus the spread, and they've won 12 of those 16 games with three losses by 5 points or less. We don't talk about this enough, and this is probably why Vegas loves Tom Herman. I think their Las Vegas Superbook has Texas 8.5 wins. Bovada have them with the second-best odds to win the Big 12. I've seen other Vegas odds that have Texas at around 8.5 wins. He's a great big game coach, or at least his resume suggests that up until now, that he's really good in the big games. And Texas, you know, plays a lot of big games. They're a blue blood. I mean, even the games last year were, you know, the losses to Oklahoma State, the loss to USC, the loss to Oklahoma. You know, those are close losses. Freshman quarterback comes down to the wire. So I think all it did was confirm some people's perception of Tom Herman, that he's a big game coach, that his teams play hard for him, and he has his guys ready to play all the time. So that stat is undeniable. It's an amazing stat. That's what I've always said about that's why the second-year turnaround is big. When you hire the right coach at a blue blood football program, it doesn't take long to get it headed on the right track. And once you get it headed down the right path, the momentum's going to take a life of its own. And that's why we've seen the second year turnaround at blue bloods happen so often and so frequently, right? Urban Meyer at Florida, national title in his second year. Yeah, it's freaking Florida. Ohio State, he's won 11 games every year he's been there. Pete Carroll at USC, 6-6 in his first year, 11-2 in his second year, national title in his third year. Bob Stoops, national title in his second year at Oklahoma. He'll look at Lincoln Riley. He kept it going. College football playoff in his first year. James Franklin at Penn State, sanctions. They go 7-6 in his first 2 years, 11-3, 11-2 in his next 2 years after that. Jim Harbaugh started out strong at Michigan. Chris Peterson at Washington went 8-6 and 7-6 in his first 2 years. Then he's going 12-2 and 10-3 and 16-17. Clay Helton at USC, 5-4 in his first year, 10-3, 11-3 in his second and third year. Mark Richt at Miami, 9-4 in his first year, 10-3 in 2017. Kirby Smart at Georgia, 8-5 in his first year, 13-2 in his second year. Gus Malzahn, same thing. Hell, Mack Brown, even here at Texas, his second year, he goes to the Big 12 title game. His fourth year is winning double-digit games. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, same thing. The one thing all those coaches have in common is not they were all great coaches that were hired, and they're all really good coaches, some of the best coaches in college football history, but that they went to blue bloods. And a blue blood is like, it's that, there's a great story about Jeff Bezos out there right now. We'll play the Craig Way interview here in a second. But the tweet from Darren Revell says it took Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, it took him 20 years at Amazon to make his first $50 billion. It took him 20 years to make his first $50 billion, made his first $50 billion in 2015. All right, he was worth $1 billion in 1998. He's worth $10 billion in 1999. So it took him 20 years to make his first $50 billion. It took him 2.5 years to make his next $50 billion, to get to $100 billion. And it took him only 6 months to get from $100 billion to $150 billion. Because he right now, Amazon is it's a blue blood. It's gargantuan. So once he got it moving in the right direction, hell, it's unstoppable. At this point, I mean, I think it's, 47% of the e-commerce. He's the richest man in the world. Because now it's going, dude. It's going full steam ahead. Nobody's going to stop it. Hell, Amazon ended up running the damn world before it's all said and done. Jeff Bezos could probably buy 4 or 5 NFL teams and just start kind of putting a monopoly on the NFL. I mean, he could do that. He's got that kind of money. I don't think he's that interested in the sports world, but you get my point. But initially, what I'm saying is the blue bloods, because Amazon became a blue blood in, you know, in terms of the business world in around 1999, around 2000. He made it a legitimate company. It became one of the, you know, top companies in the country, top companies in the world. And look how quickly it takes him to go from $50 billion to $100 billion to $150 billion. Took him 3 years, basically, to do it, when it took 20 years to get it on top. It takes you forever to establish that blue blood foundation for a college football program. But once those blue bloods fall off, oh man, you can get them back on track relatively quickly, as long as you have the right hire with the right plan, the right vision. You know what I mean? Like, there's basically, the college football blue bloods are too big to fail. They're too big to fail. You've heard that about companies. Oh, this company was too big to fail. We had to save it. We had to give it some of your taxpayer dollars to save it. The interconnectivity of it. It was too intertwined with everything. We had to save it. Too big to fail. That's what essentially blue blood college football programs are. They're too big to fail. It just, you got to hire the right guy to get it back on track, and then sooner or later, the trajectory of it will take it right to its destination, and Blue Blood's destination is always supposed to be a national title game. All right, let's hear from Tom Herman. He had a conversation with Craig Way, the voice of Longhorns. Got a chance to sit down with him here at Big 12 Media Days, and let's hear what Tom Herman had to say to my man Craig Way.
I usually refer to these things as a mile marker or a signpost, as a prelude to the start of the season. But is there anything enjoyable about this deal for you other than the fact that you're that much closer to the start of the season?
Well, I think that's the one thing is, I think you're right. You know, it kind of signifies, hey, vacation's over for us coaches. Obviously, our kids have been training all summer with a week off there during 4th of July week, but you know, our coaches are back in the office today. I'll be back in tomorrow, and it's full steam ahead, you know, getting ready for training camp. But it's also a way to kind of let our constituents know what we're thinking about, what we're hopeful for, what our goals are, where we're at, where our program stands. And so it's a good way for us to spread the message, so to speak, for, you know, because we really haven't been in front of a whole lot of microphones or cameras in the last few months.
It's been almost 2 months to the day you and I were down at the event in Houston, and you were asked about a variety of things going into the Touchdown Club thing. And one of those was the whole thing about year-round recruiting and everything going on and visits coming on, and how you were concerned because it takes time away from your student-athletes, your current ones, as much as it does the coaches as well. Have you given any more thought about that? Have you gotten any more clarity from anybody on where all that is?
Just really hard to schedule, you know, and I do think it is a burden to our student athletes. But, you know, I didn't make the rule, and, you know, I think it was kind of, what do they call it, pork-bellied into the rule of early signing day that we all wanted. We just didn't know that it was going to demand that much time for our student-athletes on a week-by-week basis. In terms of having to host and having to be quote unquote on call and you know turned on every single weekend.
All that said, now what's the vibe you've gotten back from Yancey and everybody else with regard to the guys and what kind of shape they're in and how the off season has gone?
Oh, it's phenomenal. You know, you infuse the tremendous athletes that we did with our 2018 class, and they're not just great athletes, which they obviously are. They are really there's one or two guys that you probably would say, hey, we need to continue to assimilate them into our culture. But other than that, man, these guys have hit the ground running. I think part of that is because you know, there were seven of those freshmen came in January and say they understand the expectations and were able to communicate that to the guys that just showed up in June. But this team is, I'm at a loss of for superlatives in terms of how much better shape we're in, how much stronger we are, how much more explosive we are, and how much more cohesive we are.
Is it safe to say also, because this is a year or two, you're returning guys who got to experience it firsthand and understand what's expected of them, have then been able to help you and the staff make it a little easier in getting that message across to the incoming guys because they went through it and they can spread the gospel as much as you guys can?
Yeah, year two in the off seasons, I never want to use the word easy. It's more, it makes more sense, I guess. It's not as scary. It's not as nerve-wracking for these guys because they understand. Because we don't change. That's one thing we pride ourselves constantly in, is that we're the same coaching staff day after day after day, and they know what to expect. Where, you know, in year one, it's like, what's around door number two? You know, what's behind door number two? What's around the corner? What do we got tomorrow? What do we got on? Well, what do we do on Tuesdays? What do we do on Wednesdays? And now it's just kind of business as usual.
What's the most comfortable explanation? Is not the right word, but the most comfortable way of describing where you are with your quarterbacks? But since everybody under the sun is going to ask you.
Yeah, thrilled to death. I mean, we got four guys in that room that can play, have shown that they can play at a level that you can win with. And so now it's just a matter of, you know, deciding. No, really not deciding. For them to decide by their, you know, performance in training camp, who's going to separate. But I feel... I mean, light years ahead of and better than where we were last year when we had two scholarship quarterbacks, one of them a true freshman, the other one an injured true sophomore who was 5-7. And so this is, I mean, it feels really good.
Final thing here. I know I'll see, obviously, a coaching school this weekend for the panel discussion. But beyond this weekend, what's the timetable like to let fans know how everybody ramps into the plan that you and the staff have for the next steps in the preparation for the season?
Yeah, so we will have coaching school this weekend. Our coaches are in the office, so we're in the morning workouts. Our players will work out this week and next week. They'll take about 6 days off. Before we report on August 3rd, us coaches, we will have, like I said, we'll be in the office getting ready for training camp, figuring out installation plans, practice plans, daily schedules for training camp. Coaching school will be Sunday and Monday there in San Antonio. The following weekend will be our coaches retreat. We take our coaches for 2 days and we go work away from the office. We go through our coaching manual, the expectations, the culture building. We talk about depth charts and rosters and summer scouting reports. We have a good time. We eat, we fellowship a little bit, and then we'll come back in about 2.5 weeks, and it'll be go time.
This is fun, right?
It is. It is. I'm excited.
All right. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
All right, that's Craig Way, the voice of the Longhorns, in his sit-down, intimate conversation with head coach Tom Herman of the Texas football team. And they're going to have another breakout session here momentarily. You can see all the members of the media getting ready to go, expecting Matt Rhule right now, talking to the media and waiting on Tom Herman to sit down and talk to the media well in the breakout session. We'll of course, talk some more Big 12 Media Days. We'll get into some crosstalk, too. My man Chad is going to do a little crosstalk with us on the other side. Real quick, though, I did tease this, so I want to make sure I pay off the tease. Chris Del Conte came over and showed me some love. He actually sat down and talked to the guys, BK and Trey, a little bit earlier on, and he's been around here. He's probably one of the best-dressed people here at Big 12 Media Days. And he's might be one of the coolest ADs in the country. Okay, so Texas football has themselves kind of a resident rapper. They do. They have a young man who's a journalism major who basically has become kind of the resident rapper for Texas. And his name is Arya Bastami. I hope I didn't get his name right. But he actually, at one point, got a chance to sit down with BK and Trey, too. But he put out a tweet that I don't even know if he had an agreement with Chris Del Conte or not, but he put out a tweet basically challenging Chris Del Conte to be in one of his music videos if the tweet got enough recognition, if the tweet got 700 favorites. So the tweet did get, in fact, I think 815 favorites or likes, and Chris Del Conte responded to him because his tweet was, "Let's not play these games, at Del Conte, ... If this tweet gets 700 favorites, would you be in a music video with me?" And Chris Del Conte agreed that he would be in the music video. He said, "AB, count in." He said, "Count it in," and gave the emojis for the Longhorns and the hands up. So Chris Del Conte is going to be in a music video with Arya Bastami. So if you want to follow it, Kel Pro Hero produced this. Arya, Ariea underscore Bastami, Bastami. Yeah, once again proving Texas has the coolest damn AD in the country, because soon he'll be in somebody's rap video. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap it up, put it in the oven, have a little crosstalk, talk some more Texas football, all that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Time for a little crosstalk with my man Chad Hastings. What's going on, Chad? How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing good. Getting ready to wrap things up here at Big 12 Media Days. Got to send a shout-out to our friends at Reliable Automotive for keeping us running up here. We appreciate their support. And Tom Herman is fashionably late right now to the breakout sessions. And the media are just waiting on him. The players, Brecken Hager, Andrew Beck, Patrick Vahe, Chris Nelson sitting down, as well as Matt Rhule and the Baylor Bears players sitting down in the breakout session with the media. Dana Hogeson and the West Virginia players in the breakout session, as well as K-State, Bill Snyder, his players in the breakout session. And, I don't see Oklahoma State. They got a little couple of players. Yeah.
Nice.
Mike Gundy and Tom Herman are fashionably late.
So
and they would be. They're the coolest ones of this group.
So are Hager and Vahe going with an all-out let it go on the hair, or are they going with more of a, you know, bound-up hair in some way?
No, it's all out. They've basically let it flow.
Let it roll.
And it's been very, it's been very popular. They've gotten the best hair award, no question. Baylor wins best dress. Baylor, they came sharp, man. They got the they got the pimp suits on. So they win best dress. Yeah, Texas easily wins best heart. That should be a head and shoulders commercial with these guys, man. It's
right.
Fantastic.
I'm going to hold back my joke I have for the Baylor guys in case I'm on the speaker there. I don't want to get you in trouble, so go ahead.
That is true. Well, Craig Way was close to making a joke. I brought up the Ahmad Dixon, can God save a
right. I heard that. That wasn't bad.
Craig Way almost crossed over into some territory there. Yeah, so that could happen too.
That wasn't a bad line. I was going to talk about I was going to talk about getting dressed for court, but go ahead. Never mind.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, real quick, I want to bring this up. Tom Herman gave a shout out to Yancey McKnight. He said there are 60 guys that can vertical jump 30 plus inches now.
Mm-hmm.
42 can power clean 300 pounds from the floor. 34 are 500 plus pound squat guys now. He's giving Yancey McKnight some props. He said this Texas team is going to be like ready. They're going to look like they're ready to play, even if they aren't.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you know, Yancey's a big part of this thing. Strength and conditioning coaches are huge. You know how important it is, Rod. But, yeah, I thought those were good numbers. That was kind of part of the Tom Herman filibuster today. But I thought it was it's important information. That's what he wants to know this time of year, too. It's what's on the top of his mind because he's not allowed to see him yet. So what he's allowed is Yancey can tell him stuff, and he just walked in excited. Like, I got dudes that can lift and jump, and he just wanted to tell everybody.
Yeah, you may not even know what it means, but it's like, it sounds good.
Right.
Sounds
really good, it does. Of course it does. It's like if you tell us, man, he's got a 37-inch vertical. What does it mean? I'm not exactly sure, but it sounds really cool because if you go measure yours, I bet you it's not 37 inches.
It's kind of like a man having big feet. You know, it's good to talk about, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Yeah. It mean, I wear size 13s. Yeah, actually, that does mean something. But if you get my point, usually don't mean a damn thing.
Yeah, well, I swear, I'm on the other side. I wear size 13s, and it doesn't mean much.
One other thing, Tom Herman also gave props to Puna Ford. He said this. He said he's one of the three greatest defensive tackles he's ever seen. He said Ed Oliver and Casey Hampton were the other ones. Holy Chicago.
Yeah, Chad. That's rare air. I think he's overcooking it, but I mean he's been with him, he's been with the guy more than I have. My eyes would tell me that's overcooking for Puna, but that's huge praise because those other two guys are studs.
I agree. That's when I said, I was like, damn it, I love me some Puna, but praise like that?
Right.
Woo,
right.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to hire Tom Herman to be his publicist. All right, Chad, I'll join you guys a little bit later on. Chad and Kevin, come on the next one. I thank my man Stu Martin for doing a great job. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We'll be talking about it right here on the Ridecast. I want to thank my man for Reliable Automotive for hooking this up. We love you guys. Peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.